This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
A wealth of information for managing your money. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It is a Friday, final trading day of the week. It's October 20th. Good afternoon. I'm Regine Schlesinger.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got a very warm day, a high of 77 with sunshine, and the same forecast for tomorrow. We'll have the five-day forecast coming up.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park and also sponsored by Xfinity X1. Good day on Wall Street. It's bullish. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Boy, that's right, Regine and Chris. We've seen a Dow record every day this week. It's still going. The Dow up 127 points. The blue chips at 23,290. The NASDAQ is higher by 32, also pushing to a record. Same for the S&P, adding 10. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by 0.5%. The fuel for these gains is the Senate budget resolution that could clear the way for the tax cuts that Wall Street has been expecting since Election Day. The Senate approved that measure last night. The new CEO at GE has been aggressively cutting costs, and he's not done. In his words, the words he used this morning, we're never finished. GE stock is in the red, and so is Procter & Gamble. It's the worst performing blue chip after posting disappointing quarterly sales. The National Association of Realtors says the hurricane impact appears to be already fading in the Texas and Florida areas that were hit. Nationwide, sales of previously owned homes increased, and that was unexpected, up 0.75%. Back to you, Regine and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, why are the markets rallying today? What's behind that? And what are the most reliable cars and the least?
And despite all the talk about repealing Obamacare, there still is something you need to know when you fill out your tax forms this year. And we'll also take a look on Entrepreneur Friday at a company that helps businesses see how they might apply drone technology to their businesses.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
President's tax plan is in the news today, and here to talk with us about it is Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Chris, we talk a lot about the tax plan. I don't think everybody really knows what is in it. Would you describe that for us?
Well, in fact, none of us know everything that's in it because that they intentionally kept a lot of the details in the dark so that lobbyists wouldn't get fired up and start fighting it until they had the budget passed. So we're going to learn, now that the budget's in hand, we will learn what those details look like over the next few days. But what we do know, the centerpiece is an effort to cut the corporate tax rate, currently 36%, down to 20%. That would put it in line with the average corporate tax rate in the rest of the world. The goal is to make American business more competitive. You look at Germany, for example, an economic powerhouse, an export powerhouse, even though they have wages that are pretty much in line with the U.S., we could certainly compete with that. On the individual side, that's where things get a little more murky. The most controversial element is a proposal to get rid of state and local tax deductions. We don't know if that's going to be in the bill. There's quite a bit of Republican as well as Democratic opposition to that. And we also don't know what the top tax rate will be. There is some talk in the initial proposal that the highest earners should not get a tax break, but there is no specified top tax rate, not yet.
Chris, we've seen so much gridlock when it comes to the Republican effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Is there reason to believe that this won't run into the same kind of gridlock?
Well, analysts actually were coming to think over the past couple of weeks that there was no way this thing would pass because Republicans were getting in their own way on the budget. And as recently as 2 days ago, Senator Rand Paul was was unwilling to support the budget because in order to get the support of John McCain, Republicans added defense spending that he said broke the spending agreement. So the fact that they managed to pass the budget at all is something of a miracle. It passed by two votes, and it does make the tax reform a lot more likely to succeed.
Chris, we're looking at early November for a possible decision on who will continue as chair. Of course, if Janet Yellen will continue as chair of the Fed, or if somebody new is in that position, who do you think it should be, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think I would go with either Janet Yellen, who's done a terrific job, or Jay Powell, who is on the Fed board. The reason I would limit it to those two among the five contenders is that the Fed is at the moment already engaged in a series of rate hikes, and that is a delicate situation. Continuity is important. It's well, we were in the middle of tightening when Bernanke took over from Greenspan, and it did create quite a bit of confusion in the market, uncertainty, which also knocked on the economy. And then there also was this sense that he had to push the rate hikes a little harder to prove that he had the same kind of anti-inflationary, push that Greenspan had. You don't want to see that sort of situation. I think if either Powell or Yellen gets the job, it'll be a really smooth transition. We won't have to worry about it. And hopefully we can enjoy quite a few more years of expansion before the next recession.
Chris, thanks so much for being with us. Coming up, we'll tell you which cars you can rely on.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Consumer Reports is out with one of its most closely watched surveys, which cars really go the distance. We're talking about it with John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv, based in Detroit. John, any surprises in this year's survey?
No, I think it kind of tracks with the way that Consumer Reports has been doing things for a while. And some companies tend to stay at the top and some tend to stay at the bottom.
And Toyota, which has kind of a reputation, or for the most part has had a reputation for reliability, is at the top again.
It is. It is. And Lexus, which, as you know, is owned by Toyota as well, is right behind it. But, you know, I think you've got to take these ratings. I'm not going to say with a grain of salt, but you should only use it as one metric, one way of measuring the quality of these cars, because Consumer Reports bases its findings only on people who subscribe to its magazine. And my analogy is that would be like asking readers only of the New York Times to predict who the next president of the United States is going to be. You'd probably get a skewed answer. And I think we might be getting the same thing here with Consumer Reports, because some of the vehicles that are rated very highly don't sell very well. Conversely, some of the vehicles that are not rated very well, they can't keep them on the dealer lots. And what I mean is you can use Consumer Reports as one of the number of things you should look at, but I wouldn't take their numbers to the bank as to whether a car is good or not.
The last car company that is rated here in a list of 27 is Cadillac. How do you think Cadillac would defend itself here?
Well, even Consumer Reports would say, look, Cadillac has very few models. And if just one of those models gets dinged, it drags the whole brand down. So I'm looking at it right now. They say that the Cadillac CTS is rated the highest amongst the Cadillac brand. They can't give those cars away right now. Conversely, they say that the worst quality vehicle that Cadillac has is the Escalade. And boy, those things just fly off the lots. And if there was a real correlation between bad quality and sales, you'd think you'd see it reflected in these numbers, and yet you don't. And if we go back to Toyota, they say the best or most reliable model that Toyota has is the 86. Boy, those things are nailed to the showroom floor. They say that the worst model that Toyota has is the Tacoma pickup truck, And that thing, again, is flying off the dealer lots. And I'm not saying that this data is not worthwhile. It is. I'm just saying it's just one of several things that you got to look at to figure out who's got good quality and who does not.
When you're looking at the auto industry right now, you're also looking at the near future, where there's all kinds of plans, including the car going without people in it.
Autonomous car, right.
Right. So what do we see in this data that reflects that?
Well, I think, you know, what you'll see is any kind of vehicle that's loaded up with technology, I mean, it's just a simple thing to figure out. If it's got more stuff on it, there's potentially more things that could go wrong. And as we move into this era where we're going to see cars getting even more and more and more levels of technology, it's going to be a real challenge for automakers to keep the quality levels up because, as I said, more things on the car, more things that can go wrong.
John, good talking with you. John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. Still ahead, what's moving Wall Street? News Time 12:25, the noon business hour sponsored by Lake Forest Sports Cars, the Ferrari specialist. And let's check in with Alisa Peretti.
Chris, the Dow is at its highest level in history right now, up 133 points at 23,296. Incredible. That is a gain of more than 0.5%. NASDAQ up 0.5% or 33 points, also stretching to a fresh record, as is the case for the S&P 500, up 11 points to 2573. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index up 0.2%. This is the third time this week that we've seen across-the-board records for the major indices. So Wall Street is cheering a Senate vote that's thought to pave the way for President Trump's promised tax cuts. Crude oil futures slightly higher, near $51.50 a barrel. For a check of the grains markets, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
After opening higher, we're lower here at the noon hour. Corn for December down 4 at 345, 2.5 off last week's low. March, corn also down 3.75. We have November beans down 5 at 981.5, 1 off their low. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Alisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Regine Schlesinger.
I'm Chris Kreidel, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
General Electric delivers a high-voltage shock. We'll take a look at what's moving Wall Street.
Drones for business and a company that provides them. That's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour.
The IRS says it will not accept electronic tax returns if a certain detail is missing.
One woman doing laundry is hurt in an explosion at a suburban apartment complex.
The FBI joins the investigation into the deaths of four Americans in Niger.
On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials up 130, the NASDAQ gaining 33, S&P 500 up 11.5.
72 degrees right now in Chicago, climbing to 77 this afternoon. The WBBM Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park and also sponsored by Porsche of Orland Park.
And we are joined by Jim Awad, Managing Director of Plimsoll Mark Capital in New York. Good to speak with you again, Jim. Tell us why the markets are rallying today.
I think today is primarily about tax reform, that the Senate took an important procedural step that increases the possibility and actually the probability that the Senate will be able to pass a tax bill, which will then be reconciled with the House bill. It'll be a long process, but it's estimated that it will increase corporate profitability by about 7 or 8%. All other things being equal, that would increase stock prices by about that amount. And secondly, a very well-respected hedge fund manager called Dan Loeb came out with a very bullish forecast and opinion for the U.S. markets. So I think that, along with the continued positive earnings season, we continue this long stretch of upward prices, low volatility, low volume, and it looks like, unless it gets disrupted by an external event, we're at that point that it's going to continue for a while longer.
Jim, as you know, yesterday marked the 30th anniversary of the largest one-day crash on Wall Street. And look at how the markets have been performing here in the U.S. for so many months now. And what could go wrong?
Well, I'll tell you what could go wrong. You know, something is going to happen someday to end this bull market. My guess is that that surprise is embedded in the credit markets, that with money being so easy for so long and so cheap, that the discipline in the lending markets has dropped dramatically. And my friends in the distressed debt business tell me that the credit markets are more sloppy now than they were in 2007, except this time it's not in housing. So as the recovery gets older, as interest rates trend up, I fear, whether it's here or in China, that at some point you'll get a credit event which will scare the system, shock the system. And you talk about 87. What made 87 so dramatic was what they called portfolio insurance, which was a program where the more stocks went down, the more the insurance program sold them. Well, you have that same mechanism in place today with algorithmic quantitative trading, and it's much bigger. So what I fear is when something comes along to make stock prices go down, these algorithms and quantitative trading will make stocks go down quicker and more rapidly than the fundamentals warrant. And also, you've got so much money in ETFs today, which really are not the underlying stocks. And if individual investors start to sell the ETFs, we're really not sure how they would function in that environment. So I think there's a very real risk out there a couple of years that some bad event could happen, but not yet.
And we are actually seeing evidence of us investors starting to pull money out of ETFs. But I wanted to ask you, some analysts are saying that the parallel of the market today is not really the crash of 87, but the tech crash in 2000. They see some parallels there. Do you?
Well, yes, to the extent that you have certain groups of stocks outperforming the rest of the market. They call them the FANG stocks is the nickname they give them, that they outperform the rest of the market and they're priced on momentum, not valuation, and that drags along the rest of the market until it doesn't. And yes, that's true, but we are in better shape than we were in 2000 in terms of interest rates and the stage of the economic recovery. But broadly, conceptually speaking, it's a similar phenomenon. But you're not in terms of the broad market, you're not anywhere near as expensive as you were back then.
As you look at these records that we're setting on Wall Street, seems like almost every day, has Wall Street gotten ahead of the fundamentals in the economy? Is the economy as strong as Wall Street seems to be indicating?
The economy is in very good shape. It's growing at a sustainable rate, has a possibility of upticking here due to the tax reform and the deregulation. And almost every metric shows that the economy is growing enough to keep corporate profits growing, but not so much as to create a situation of overheating high inflation and a hostile Fed. So I think they're moving pretty much in lockstep. And although the P.E. ratio of the stock market has gone up somewhat this year, so have earnings. And so you're going up because earnings are going up and because the market is gaining increasing confidence that those earnings are sustainable. So I would say that, you know, the higher you go, the longer you go, the greater the inevitable risk, but not yet.
General Electric, its stock has declined more than 23% this year, and there's a third quarter miss. What's going on here?
Well, this is a big, long turnaround. I suspect that with the new management, you've begun the turnaround, but these things take a long time. It's a big company and a huge cultural change, and I think you've got a situation where the fundamentals and the stock are in a long-term process of bottoming. The next major event is going to be the dividend announcement on November 13th. But you're just beginning the process of turning this company around. It's going to take a long time. The stock is justified in its decline. And probably if you're thinking out, you know, 7, 8, 9 years, it's probably not a bad time to start looking at it. But I wouldn't expect to make a huge boatload of money on it in the next 12 or 24 months.
Good to talk with you, Jim. Thanks for talking with us for a few minutes today. Jim Awad is Managing Director at Plimsoll Mark Capital in New York. Coming up, if a company has a drone in the sky, it could have been provided by the firm that we're going to be talking with. That's next on Entrepreneur Friday.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
For many companies today, among the tools of the business, a drone. It's Entrepreneur Friday on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Joining us is Chris Courtney, founding member and chief pilot for Measure, a Washington, D.C.-based provider of drone services to business. Chris, very good to meet you. Tell us a little bit about how your company got started. It's 3 years old, and I guess there's growing demand every year.
Yes, absolutely, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate that. Our company got started, obviously, like you said, 3 years ago. We always believed that drone technology was going to come a point where it was going to be infused into the commercial sector and commercial market, and we recognized early on that there were a tremendous amount of use cases that could come out of this technology. And ultimately, we believe that it's going to, and it is, improving companies' ROI and the way that they do their current practices.
Well, some companies are obvious candidates for drone use among your clients. You've got power companies that need to survey their power lines. But tell us some of the more subtle uses for drones, some of the ones that we might not think of offhand.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So our company's been focused in the telco, energy, AEC, and media space. We've done everything from broadcast live news. We broadcasted for the storms that recently impacted Texas and Florida and Puerto Rico. We've done inspections on wind turbines, solar farms, transmission lines, distribution lines. We've done audits on cell towers. And we've done, you know, full-scale production of media events, news events, sporting events. We've done over 3,500 flights. I've operated in 30 states and really have addressed 20 different use cases, and we've kind of explored them all. So it's been a fascinating ride in this sector.
I'm always amazed when we talk with this entrepreneur segment on the Noon Business Hour, how you find this idea. A million other people could have found this idea, but you're the one who found it. How do you do that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I am a retired military officer and aviator of 20-plus years. Served both in the Army and the Coast Guard. And as a helicopter pilot, I would often be out there doing certain missions, and I would be like, man, this could be done so much more effectively, so much more safer with a drone. And I had always envisioned that at some point, being in a drone company, because I felt like, you know, the technology, and for all those reasons, it made sense. And to this day, it is making sense, and it's starting to pay off, and it's awesome to watch.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Chris. Congratulations on your business. Chris Courtney is a founding member of Measure in Washington. And still to come, the IRS tells tax professionals about what will block or suspend 2017 tax returns.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The IRS has an important heads up, and this is way ahead of tax season, about something not to forget. We're talking with Kat Lucero, tax reporter for Bloomberg based in Washington. Kat, thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour today. Tell us about the Obamacare disclosures.
So earlier this week, the IRS announced that it will not accept electronically filed tax returns where taxpayers don't indicate that they have health coverage under the Affordable Care Act. So this is kind of a reverse from earlier this year. As you know, in February, under the new Trump administration, the IRS said, hey, we're going to accept those returns that have remained silent in terms of indicating whether it has health coverage or not, with the hopes of the Republicans attempting to repeal the Affordable Care Act. That didn't happen. So now that the IRS is preparing for the 2018 filing season, they're going to reject these tax returns that don't indicate the health coverage.
So the IRS is following a law that the president wants to kill. How does this end?
How does this end? Well, I think right now they're just following the law. I mean, the IRS is required to administer any tax law that Congress has passed. And so since this is still in the books, they're going to follow the law.
Well, they are enforcing the disclosure. What about the penalties for those who don't have insurance?
Yes, they're also enforcing the penalties on that. The IRS had said before that, or they announced in a statement in September that the IRS started sending letters to about 130,000 taxpayers who didn't address the healthcare requirement. So, so we don't know exactly what those. You know, it really depends on their what the situation is. So they may have to pay a penalty based on. Based on that, on that situation, or they don't have to, or they have to file additional reporting requirements.
Well, the advocates of repeal and replace haven't been able to get their act together so far, but if they do between now and the filing deadline in April, would that affect anything, or for the current tax returns, it would be the same?
It would probably cause some confusion. If anything, it's for, you know, the tax software providers, the tax preparers. You know, they have to change. There's some technical changes that they have to do with their software in order to make those changes. So it'll cause some havoc. You know, for the IRS especially, they're already inundated with a lot of tax changes that they have to do, you know, with the hurricane tax relief that just passed a few weeks ago. And then the agency itself has been constrained budget-wise for a few years now. So it'll definitely cause some confusion, but at the same time, you know, it's nimble, but we'll just see how it goes.
Thanks for the information. Kat Lucero is tax reporter at Bloomberg in Washington. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at cbschicago.com/audio and the all-new radio.com app.
WBBM News Time 12:55 as we wrap up the noon business hour with a check for the markets. Sponsored by Grandview Homes, here's Elisa Parenti.
Regine, the promise of tax cuts is sending the major averages to across-the-board records, and this is the third time this week, fifth time for the Dow. The blue chip's up 141 points and now moving above 23,300. NASDAQ up 32, good for a gain of 0.5%. Same for the S&P, also a fresh record, adding 12 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by 0.2%. General Electric CEO says the company needs to make major changes and that everything is on the table. There are no sacred cows. All this after GE profits in the latest quarter were lower than the lowest analyst estimate. And investors also have some disappointing news from Procter & Gamble, its shares tumbling. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.